term threatens.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of cult
be as gods, you know, catapult of propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed split metal location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
There's an old tongue-in-cheek saying that it's not paranoia if they really are out to get you. And that's kind of the theme of our program tonight. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. We've got a pair of interviews recorded at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, July 15th through the 17th of 2016 to feature tonight. And the speakers, both without, intending to, and without me intending to pull them together for this interview, but I kind of realized after the fact that they kind of fit into a particular theme. And that is the people who have aligned with spiritual forces rebelling against God. To try to, well, destroy the rest of us. Fascinating discussions from two of my favorite speakers, two of the favorite speakers at conferences around the country, dynamic men whose books are very educational and informative. Tonight we bring you Paul McGuire, and we begin with our good friend, Dr. Michael Lake. A land in ancient Mesopotamia founded thousands of years before the birth of Christ still affects our world today. We're here at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference with Dr. Michael Lake, author of the fascinating book, The Shinar Directive, and also a talk that you're going to give on Saturday here at the conference that I find really fascinating because it relates to some of the strategic decisions made by God when he directed Joshua into the Holy Land. First of all, let's talk about Shinar, because the title may not be quite familiar, the name of that land. The Shinar Directive, what is that land and what was that what was that plan about?
Well, the Shinar Directive is basically ground zero for all occultism, for all mystery religions. It's what Nimrod began to put into place there. You find it in Genesis chapter 11. But what's interesting, in the book of Revelation, we're still dealing with Mystery Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
That's how powerful that was, that he had put a directive or plan into place to war against God. At the Tower of Babel, it was postponed. And we're in the heat of the battle again today, that all esoteric groups have basically committed themselves to fulfill the directive that Nimrod started all those years ago.
One of the things I found fascinating about Nimrod, I did some research on him for a paper that I wrote. We included it in an early online edition of the Skywatch TV magazine, was how upper-level Scottish Rite Freemasonry today basically venerates Nimrod, the 32nd and 33rd degrees, because that's what the goal is. It's the goal of the occultists, isn't it, to take us back to Babel?
It is, and what he achieved, because he became a Gibborim. We see that with what? Why was Nebuchadnezzar judged? He offended the watchers because he said, I've become like Nimrod. I've become a Gibborim. And they said, no, you're not. It offended them. The Caesars that claimed to become gods was because they believed that they were achieving out of glory what Nimrod had done at the Tower of Babel in Babylon.
He cast a long shadow throughout history. I mean, his seat of his kingdom, according to the Bible, was Erech, which is the name of the land today, Iraq.
Yes.
Well, phenomenal. But that's a topic that you know, I've dug into it at some length, and I'm familiar with it. We had a wonderful conversation last night that lasted quite a while in the hall, but we didn't talk about your discussion on Saturday, your presentation on Saturday, which is Jericho, Understanding Spiritual Strongholds. Jericho, I know really about the city is that it was where Joshua, I know the Sunday school version of the story. Joshua and the Israelites marched around it for 7 days blowing the trumpets, and then the walls came down.
Well, actually, this is a chapter in my upcoming book, The Shireath Imperative, where I'm looking for answers. You know, it's not enough to say, okay, this is all the stuff the devil's doing. We're required to occupy until the Lord comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look into a lot of things. One of them in Jericho, as I was studying it out, because there are stories for for us to learn how to deal with things. So there's a lot of types and shadows. Why did God have them go to Jericho? Why was it the first one? Why was it accursed or devoted to God that they weren't allowed to have anything there? In my research, I ran across the Lexham Bible Dictionary that said something that jumped out of the page. They said that the wall was built with Cyclopean architecture.
Hmm.
I said, whoa, wait a minute. Cyclopean architecture is antediluvian. what's it doing in the walls of Jericho? Well, most commentators will say, well, the walls of Jericho, I think, was 1600 BC or something like that. But when I looked it up on Wikipedia, I found that there's a section of the foundation that they predate well before the flood. That Jericho was built on the top of a citadel or a stronghold of the Nephilim.
Hmm.
So it was occultly, they built on a foundation of something that was occultly charged, that there was demonic power there. And you see that with the practices that we see with Jericho in Joshua's day, that aborted fetuses they would implant into the wall to increase the spiritual power of that wall. And there were a lot of this very heinous things that they were doing. I also believe that because of its foundation, and those foundations survived the flood of Noah, that when they built upon it, it served as an occult magnet of demonic power that enabled the Nephilim, or not the Nephilim, but the Anakim and all the other giants. The reason they were there was that was their place of power.
Hmm.
That's why they were attracted to that area. And so God basically said, I'm going to be strategic. I'm going to have you cut off their power source so that when you take the land, they can't draw from that occult power that was embedded in the city itself.
Hmm.
And so God is very strategic.
Yeah. It's fascinating when you read the account of the conquest and the wars that Joshua, the war that Joshua led, where he goes north first, then he goes south. But the people groups who lived in those areas, who are identified as the occupants of the hill country that Joshua attacked, were the clans identified as giants in the book of Genesis.
Absolutely. And that's why God had hit first. That was the tithe on the land, Jericho. But I think because everything was so demonically charged, God said, it's going to have to be that tithe to me that you cannot take any of it, because in the Western world, we don't understand that physical objects can hold spiritual power.
Hmm.
And so when you have that level permeating everything that was in that city, that's why he said, go and wipe it all out and burn all of it. Don't take any of it all.
Yeah, and that was, that's a word that in Hebrew, karem, means devoted to destruction. You see that a lot in the book of Joshua.
Absolutely. And one of the things I thought was interesting, when you look at the research Steve Quayle has done on how Nephilim, how did they get these monolithic stones built, he has hypothesized with his research that they had nasal cavities in which they were able to use harmonics to levitate those stones. Well, in science, it's called cymatics. We know that sound can affect matter.
Mm-hmm.
And really fascinating. So God, in his divine justice, he has the children of Israel circle around it 360 degrees around it, and turn his own people into a harmonic weapon to dismantle what the Nephilim had built using harmonics.
That's fascinating
only
stuff.
Only God can do that.
Wow. So just that being the opening shot in that war, how then did that empower the Israelites or affect the Israelites? And if it cut off the power source of the Anakim, the Rephaim, who were still in the land, why didn't the Israelites drive them completely out of the land?
Well, what's interesting is at the end of Joshua's life, he's really kind of disappointed in his life that he didn't get it accomplished. And he goes to God. And God basically said, I'm going to leave certain groups there because there's a day coming that Israel will have to learn to do war again.
Hmm.
And those same areas, those same regions, are the same regions that we see the resistance against them now in the Middle East. It's those same people groups, or the same areas in which those people groups were.
Yeah, the areas of the Philistines, Gath, where you still had the remnants of the giants there that came up again during the time of King David. Fascinating stuff.
But I think it's also a perfect type and shadow of spiritual strongholds. That I believe that we have spiritual territory within us. What's interesting is the soul corresponds with the second heaven, so second heaven realities can affect the soul. And we've never asked what a stronghold is. It's a fortified area something's living in, but it's also to protect an area. And many times when we do deliverance, we're getting rid of the things outside the fort, but only speaking the truth of God can tear down the lies that built the fort, and they're all demonic in their origin. Hmm. Either Satan is very strategic. He'll either have a lie embedded with great force, or a wound, or a tragedy, or something that embeds that thing, just like the foundation of the Nephilim was there that they were building upon, to build that fortified area. And the Christian has to confront that himself. And I think the harmonic is speaking the truth of God against the embedded lie.
Hmm.
That we, and so I think it teaches us some great lessons on spiritual warfare, that every one of us have the sin that easily besets us. There's that one stronghold that once we dismantle it, we can go ahead and clear the land.
Hmm. You anticipated my question. I'm glad you did, because that's really the relevant thing. I mean, reading the history is fascinating, but what it means for us today. I mean, what lessons do we draw from this today? What types of wounds or doors might we open that allow this type of a stronghold to be erected inside of us?
How many times, growing up, we learn so much, and it's finally brought down to the unconscious level, which is almost like a hard drive, that it's how you filter your reality. Well, what happens if somebody sexually abused you, or somebody mistreated you, or somebody taught you mindsets and worldviews that were counter to God, that are sitting there resting at the unconscious level, that is basically filtering your very concept of reality? That's where those things lie. And for a Christian, we know that they're there if you're hearing truth, but there's something raising up on the inside of you, beating against that. That's a stronghold.
Hmm.
And so what I teach my students to do is mark those areas. That's a sign that you're beating on a wall. And then you've got to go to the root cause, the foundation of that, to find out what that lie is and bombard it with God's truth until it's destroyed.
Hmm. How often do you find people trying to do a deliverance and wind up essentially just beating their heads against that wall because they think that they can overcome it with just sheer force?
You can't, because I think when we do deliverance for somebody, it's everything living outside the fort. You know, it's almost like, you know, imagine in ancient times you would have that fortified area and you would have farmland and residents outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have these demonic powers that are basically farming this individual to get their desires or whatever they want in the earth. And we can cast those out.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to a stronghold, it has to be very personal. We can team with the person, but they've got to begin addressing the lies of the foundation.
Hmm. How dangerous is it? Let me ask you maybe one final question here. How dangerous can it be to attempt to engage an entity in this type of a situation without really understanding what you're doing?
Very dangerous. And if it's somebody on the outside, you're not going to get anywhere anyway.
Mm.
The person's just going to shut down and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a personal thing. That's why God had all of Israel circle around it. Joshua didn't do it. All of Israel, because everyone had a personal stake in it. They had to release the voice of God through them to the stronghold to tear it apart.
Hmm.
And part of us as believers, as the Holy Spirit works on us, we've got to basically soldier up, face the thing head on, and have the tenacity to call it the lie that it is. Once we do, its foundation begins to crumble.
Hmm.
And to keep bombarding it with God's truth, because the interesting thing about our unconscious mind is it's constantly looking for updated information.
Hmm.
And so as we begin speaking truth, and it's coming out of our mouth, no, this is truth, it begins to destroy and to tear apart the very foundations of that stronghold.
Hmm. And with no stronghold to retreat to, then the enemy has no place to hide.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
And then we got to build a fortress to God of his truth, a citadel of truth in that place.
Hmm. Dr. Michael Lake is the author of The Shinar Directive. He's also the author of the forthcoming book, The Sheareth Imperative. And he is the founder and chancellor of Biblical Life College and Seminary in Marshfield, Missouri. Michael, where do people find out more about the seminary?
Seminary is biblical-life.com. Our main hub site is kingdomintelligencebriefing.com, or you can just type in Dr. Michael Lake and it'll take you right to the KIB site.
All right. We thank you for watching. I'm Derek Gilbert at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference.
sitting next to a man who is a multimedia threat. He is a feature film producer. He's been a commentator on most of the cable news channels, hosted a very entertaining and informative afternoon drive radio program for a number of years, and he's the author of 28 books now. The most recent, Mass Awakening, The Babylon Code, co-authored with Pulitzer Prize nominee Troy Anderson, and The Prophecy of the Future of America, 2016-2017. It's our honor to welcome Paul McGuire to the Rocky Mountain.
Great being back on your show, as always.
Well, it's one of the things that Sharon and I have talked about when we come back from conferences and we've had the opportunity to talk with you is that we always appreciate the passion and intensity you bring to your research and to your presentation. And I know that's why people always appreciate seeing you at these conferences. One of the topics that you're going to be talking about here at the conference that people will see on the DVD set here is regarding the technocratic elite. And that's a word that is kind of slowly entered mainstream use here in the last few years, technocracy, technocratic elite. What, I guess, in the interest of defining terms so people understand why it's important to be aware of what's going on with technocracy and the technocratic movement, what is technocracy?
Well, that's an excellent question, and one that I'm hoping, as I know you are with your research, I'm hoping to educate people regarding that. And it's one of the key parts in my new book, Prophecy of the Future of America, 2016-2017, and one of my messages here is on the technocratic elite. So many of your viewers are familiar with Brzezinski, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, Rockefeller's right-hand man, Secretary of State for countless presidents, big globalist, mm-hmm. powerful globalist. So in 1976, I believe, he writes a book dealing with the technocratic elite in his title, and he uses technocratic elite in his title, and he calls for, on the cover page, I believe, he calls for the use of technocratic weapons, which is pretty scary. Hmm. Well, back then in 1976, nobody had a clue what he was talking about. Most people don't know what he's talking about today. But as you know, one of the driving messages I have is to communicate to people the reality that there is a technocratic elite, a secretive elite, ruling the world, if you will. Aldous Huxley referred to it as the scientific elite or the scientific dictatorship. Mm. The technocratic elite is another term, and it actually defines it even more precisely. The technocratic elite consists of scientists, international bankers, financiers, technologists, people very high up in the occult, like key members of the Illuminati, members of globalist financial institutions. And the key issue here, the key point is, in the definition of the term technocratic elite, it comes from the word techne, mm-hmm. from which we get our word technological. So it's a technological elite. But when we peel back the onion further, we see that techne also comes, it's the root derivative word from which we get Wicca or witchcraft. Hmm. So now we're talking about really a witchcraft, technological and occult witchcraft elite. Mm-hmm. And then if we peel back the onion further, the definition of the technocratic elite reveals itself even more, because it goes from witchcraft, which is techne, technological, which is techne. But by techne, it also means, in the word derivative, to reconfigure the external reality. So what these highest level members of the technocratic elite or scientific dictatorship or scientific elite are doing is they're using technology to reconfigure our reality. And, you know, I know your research, your wife's research, Tom's research goes into this. You know what they're talking about, you know, DNA modification, surveillance society. They want, in most simplistic terms, to establish a scientific dictatorship where they're the god men and we're the slaves.
I think people might be surprised, because we think of technology and in a positive light. I mean, here in the West, technology has made the quality of life for most of us far beyond what medieval kings were able to achieve, you know, at the height of their power. We live in more comfort, with more food, and with greater ease than any
previous civilization on planet Earth. And a lot of that is due to technology and technological improvements. If you were to draw a Venn diagram of what people were involved in this world, technology and, you know, the occult, you wouldn't think would overlap. Right. So where is that congruence? Where is that point where technology moves into becoming a religion?
Well, again, you're asking, in my opinion, the most important questions. Because unless you understand that, you really can't understand Bible prophecy, you can't understand what's happening in the world. So we go back to ancient Babylon, and we deal with this in the Babylon Code.
Mm-hmm.
And we discover, and I know you're very up to speed on all this, well, let's go back before ancient Babylon. Let's go back to Mount Hermon, where the 200 fallen angels descend upon Mount Hermon and mate with human women. As you know, in the story, in the account in Enoch, which is referenced in Jude, we read that when the fallen angels descended upon Mount Hermon and interbred with women, creating the Nephilim, they gave mankind technology and science. So there we have the first link of occult, supernatural power, giving mankind science and technology.
Right, right.
We also see that in Babylon. Babylon, the Tower of Babel, built by Nimrod, and as I point out in the first book, A Prophecy of the Future of America, the Tower of Babel, in my opinion, is an interdimensional portal like the CERN Collider. It is a stargate for the entrance of extra-dimensional entities. Now, whenever I say this, there's a certain percentage of Christians who just, they want to put me through the Inquisition and behead me, But I fire back politely and in love. I fire back and I say, hey, it's in the word definition of Babel or Babylon. As you know, it means Gate of the Gods.
Right, Akkadian Bab Ilu, Gate of the Gods.
Right. So right there it tells you it's an interdimensional gate. And now we have the CERN Hadron Collider, and we have this Gothard Tunnel in Europe where they had this openly Luciferian celebration.
Mm-hmm.
But in all these things, as I know you're very, very familiar with, because you write and do stuff on it constantly, the occult, Luciferianism, the supernatural, is totally intermingled with cutting-edge science and technology.
Yeah, it's all about transformation. It's the transhumanist movement, and
exactly.
it's the same old lie from the garden: "Ye shall be as gods."
Exactly right. And but sadly to say, many Christians, the ones who don't read Bible prophecy, they don't understand that this is biblical. I mean, we're not making this up. You know, you and I don't have tinfoil hats, and we don't have secret meetings.
Well, I do, but I only wear it on weekends, so it's...
right.
And it's only so that you don't have to.
Exactly.
But the head of research for CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, said when and this was in an article that I referenced when looking into those strange cloud formations that recently appeared over CERN, they were running the program called AWAKE.
Mm-hmm.
And he said back in 2009, one of the side effects of this program is we may open a portal into another dimension and something may come through, or we might send something through it. Now, this wasn't a crazy Christian conspiracy theorist on the internet making this up. This is the guy at the head of the research for CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. And then comes word within the last couple of months that the Chinese are planning to build a particle accelerator twice as large as the Large Hadron Collider. They're going to begin construction, if the Lord tarries, in the year 2020. So, you know, as if the Europeans don't have the power to open a big enough portal, the Chinese want to create one twice the size.
Let me just add, if I might, to what you said there, because when I told people about the interdimensional entities coming through CERN, I was challenged, like, how can you say that? I mean, you're really out there. But I said, as you did, you simply have to read the quote of the director of CERN, the scientific director of CERN said that, not me, not you.
Yeah, it's somewhat speculative, admittedly, but when you got guys who are running it and said we essentially don't know what's going to happen, but this might be one possibility, it just makes you wonder if there isn't another purpose that we just haven't been told.
But excuse me, just sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but on what you're saying here, as you know, they have the goddess Shiva
in front of the right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Another clue. And then I heard, and you may know more about this than I do. I heard that there was a documentary crew that went into CERN in the initial stages of construction, into the tunnel areas, and whether this was put on later on, obviously it probably was put on later on, in like hieroglyphics, ancient languages, they mm-hmm. have all this occult language saying that it was a interdimensional thing. I don't know if you've come across that.
No, I hadn't seen that, but yeah, it's you get the sense that you just have scientists with lots and lots of money essentially smashing little matchbox cars together to see what happens when they break apart.
Right.
Except they're doing it with the very particles that create the building blocks
exactly.
of matter
exactly.
and all creation. The book that you and Troy Anderson wrote, The Babylon Code, which has done very well, very well received, you interviewed a number of, quite a number of prominent theologians and public figures to get a handle on what the elite is trying to achieve, where they're trying to pull society or push society in the years ahead. Without recapitulating much of what is already in the book or what people may have seen in other presentations, what did you conclude, you and Troy, from the investigation into the book, The Babylon Code?
Well, what we concluded, and Troy, being a Pulitzer Prize-nominated journalist, our documentation I consider impeccable because of his ability, we concluded that this one world government, one world religion, one world economic system that God warns about in Genesis and says is coming back in Revelation 17 and 18 is now rising. This global order is rising right before our face. And we're hoping to alert Christians that this has everything to do with Bible prophecy, and they need to be informed about it.
Hmm. It's definitely an interesting time to be alive,
to say the least.
Yeah, we're heading back to Babel. Where do people follow your work, your ministry, Paul?
They can go to paulmaguire.us, and we have tons of free YouTubes and audio and all kinds of free stuff, as well as the books or whatever.
All right. Well, thank you for your work and your research in pointing people into at the evidence for what is to come.
And thank you for you and your wife's research, which I often visit and is cutting edge and very much needed.
Well, you're too kind. At the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, I'm Derek Gilbert. As always, check the show notes, vftb.net. That's vftb.net. And, of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe and share the channel address, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. That's youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Trying to work more video into these programs as we go forward. Of course, the interview is recorded at the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. You're getting the audio only for those, just as a courtesy to Prophecy Watchers and Skywatch TV, who graciously allow me to use the audio. But the video interviews will be part of the DVD set that is coming out in October, possibly November, but we're hoping for October. And you can pre-order the DVD set now from Skywatch TV. And when you do, you get the 5-volume Researcher's Library of Ancient Texts free from Skywatch TV. You'll find that deal at skywatchtvstore.com. That 5-volume set of texts is normally sells for $150 by itself. So essentially, you're getting an equal value to the DVD set free when you pre-order skywatchtvstore.com. One of the texts in there, by the way, is the Septuagint translation of the Old Testament, which is yielding some really interesting stuff. Found myself unable to sleep last night as I record this on Wednesday, August 31st. And so about 1:30 in the morning, I was up, decided to read an academic paper that I downloaded. That's my new hobby, by the way, just going online and trolling the internet, looking for academic papers related to the ancient Near East and cosmology of Babylon, Egypt, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hurrians, all of the cultures around ancient Israel, just to see how they fit together. Seems to me that we Christians study the Bible and have been taught the Bible from Sunday school onward as though Israel was hermetically sealed from the rest of the cultures around it, except for when those cultures intrude by, you know, invading and sacking Israel, sacking Jerusalem or something. Excuse me. But that's not the case. These cultures interacted with one another far more than we realize. sociologists, anthropologists, historians, archaeologists, they all know this. They all know this, but we view the Bible as though it was set apart, and we only consider the Babylonians or the Egyptians or the Arameans or the Philistines or the the Sidon or Tyre when one of the prophets speaks out against them because of something that they believe or what they're about to do to Israel to punish Israel for its wickedness. But I mean, think about this: the casket of Tutankhamun, his I know casket's not the right word, but whatever. He was buried with a bracelet that included stones that, based on their chemical composition, had to have been imported from Scandinavia. Scandinavia. Now, Tutankhamun lived about, just using the standard timeline here, so we don't get into, whether or not these timelines are correct, but roughly speaking, within 100 years or so of the Exodus. Okay, 100 years after the Exodus, roughly speaking. So keep in mind that in that day, the period of the Judges, there was trade between Egypt and what is now Sweden, Norway. But we're never taught that in the Bible. And of course, as those traders, merchants, traveled from one place to another, they exchanged ideas. And the more I read about this, the more I learn, the more I understand that the cosmologies of the ancient world are all interconnected. And they basically all point back to ancient Sumer. So, anyway, that all relates to the book that I'm working on, and I found some fascinating stuff. This past weekend, and I didn't talk it up a whole lot. I'm not as good about promoting myself, I suppose, as I ought to be. If I was, I'd have a lot more YouTube subscribers, but that's okay. I mean, the people who are supposed to hear what I'm saying are hearing what I'm saying. Talked at the Morningside Church, that's Jim Baker's church, again this past weekend. They gave me a couple more hours to stand up and basically run through, I'd call it a raw draft. It's not even polished enough to be a rough draft of the forthcoming book, working titled The Great Inception. And I'm coming up with so much stuff. There may be a second book in here. I may have to pare this down a little bit so it doesn't come out like a shotgun, try to focus the book content a little bit more. But when the video is made available, which they do, they basically post the archives of the series that they call The Prophets Speak. It's something they're doing 7 nights a week at 7 p.m. Central Time. I will post links to the archived video, and they may make the video available to us. I think they will. They made available the video from the first two talks that I gave, which was essentially an extended version of my presentation from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. These two talks focused on Joshua's war against the giants in the Holy Land and some really interesting connections that I've made there that tie in with Babylonian and Greek cosmology, and then the confrontation between Elijah and the priests of Baal on Mount Carmel, which, as Sharon pointed out, was another holy mountain that I should have added to my list of holy mountains from my original talk. But that would have made 8 holy mountains, and I wanted to keep it to 7. So, and anyway, but she was right. There was a god worshipped on Mount Carmel from ancient times, and there's a reason that the showdown between Yahweh and Baal took place on Mount Carmel. So those were the talks this past weekend. And again, the links will be forthcoming. Keep an eye on the Twitter feed, the View from the Bunker Twitter feed, and also my website, DerekPGilbert.com, where I will post those links as soon as they become available. A couple of things in the news. Hawaii, as we're recording this, is bracing for 1 and perhaps 2 hurricanes. Hurricane Madeline is, as I record this, could be swinging dangerously close to the Big Island. And then Hurricane Lester seems to be following the same track. Now, that may have changed since last night when I last updated the story, but that is something that Hawaii hasn't had happen in a long time. Meteorologists are predicting impacts on the islands worse than Tropical Storm Izelle from a couple of years ago, which caused about $79 million worth of damage to Hawaii. So pray for the folks in Hawaii there. A couple of news items that illustrate in very graphic ways why doctrine is important. A woman in Oklahoma City has been arrested. She's a 50-year-old woman charged with first-degree murder in the death of her daughter, 33-year-old, who police found when they came to visit the older woman, 50-year-old Juanita Gomez, just doing a wellness check. And they found the daughter lying in the home with a large crucifix on her chest. Apparently, Juanita Gomez has confessed to police, reportedly, that she shoved the crucifix down her daughter's throat. She was trying to exorcise the devil, is what she said, from her daughter, and tried to do it by forcing her forcibly to ingest a religious medallion and this large crucifix. The daughter died from her wounds. And then in Las Vegas, a man has been arrested for inciting violence via YouTube. 24-year-old man Bryce Matthew Cuellar was posting pictures to Facebook and to YouTube of himself dressed in what looks like tactical police gear or military gear, flak jacket, helmet, you know, weaponry that looks military. I'm certainly no expert, but it looks like an AR-15 type rifle to my untrained eye. He identified himself as a Christian, but wanted to kill government. Said he wanted to kill government officials, gays, lesbians, and Satanists. And of course, skeptics are picking up on this as an example of why Christians, fundamentalist Christians, are dangerous. Now, anyone who believes that doing violence to others is what we as Christians are called to do doesn't understand the Bible. And this young man, who is now in custody, is no more a Christian than I am a baseball player, a Major League Baseball player, just because I wear a Chicago Cubs cap from time to time. So, but stories had come out, again, showing why a solid understanding of Christian doctrine is important in kind of a graphic sense. I mean, obviously, the ultimate reason for believing in Jesus Christ is that whether you realize it or not, you are going to live forever, or at least until, for some, a second death comes around. But all of us will survive this mortal shell that we call our human bodies. The question you need to answer is, where do you plan to spend eternity? And again, this young man is putting too much focus on the here and now and not enough on the hereafter. You know, a number of other things in the news. I could spend a couple of hours on this because this is what I do for Skywatch TV, is research stuff in the news and try to put it together into a daily 10 to 15 minute narrative. There is plenty out there. Austin, Texas. Let me just comment on this for a moment. I had to self-edit as I was preparing this one for Skywatch TV because my initial reaction is to get angry about this, but there is a danger when confronting apostasy within the church that we make ourselves so angry that we become a stumbling block to people who clearly don't understand the gospel. And besides, it's not for me to determine the state, the ultimate state of someone's heart. They may be saved and just not living out the faith according to God's will in Scripture. I don't know. I don't know that for a fact. But where we see error, we are compelled to point it out, but to try to do it in a loving way, with gentleness and respect, according to Scripture. In Austin, Texas, a member of the First United Methodist Church there got a standing ovation from the congregation for proposing marriage to his boyfriend in front of the congregation. And the young man, while giving his testimony, said, "I don't need permission to be gay. I get that from Jesus." Well, with all due respect, he didn't, and he doesn't. If you are a Christian and you believe in the triune Godhead, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, then who was it giving the law to Moses? Who was it who told Moses that to lie with another man is abomination? That was Jesus, who was the same yesterday, today, and forever. So, you know, these who think they can justify or rationalize their lifestyle by saying Jesus is love and he would want me to love who I want to love are ignoring, well, frankly, they're ignoring scripture, they're ignoring doctrine. But again, this is what the enemy wants to use to get us angry. And we as Christians are all too often willing to fall into that trap of responding with anger to these hot button social issues, while the elites, the technocrats, and those who are completely sold out to the enemy exploit our anger with others to distract us from what they're doing and also to destroy our witness, our testimony. Because as non-Christians see us reacting with anger, that's how they see the gospel of Jesus Christ. For many people, the only Bible they know is what they see in our lives. And if all they see is anger, then we have become a stumbling block between them and the kingdom of heaven. And I don't want to have to explain that to God. I've fallen victim to this and fallen into this trap more often than I care to admit. But this is something that I believe is a tool of the enemy. And give the enemy credit. They are clever, devilishly clever, pardon the pun. But they will use hot-button social issues like this, same-sex marriage, abortion, to make us so angry at our fellow brothers and sisters in this world that we repel them from the gospel instead of drawing them to it. It's not an easy task, but we're not fighting an enemy that is going down easily. They're far older, far more cruel, far more insidious and clever than we can imagine, which is why we shouldn't rely on our own devices like the young man in Las Vegas who thinks that he can solve the problem of sin with an AR-15. That's not going to get it done. Coming up on A View from the Bunker, we've got a couple of weeks devoted to a topic that you will find disturbing. It is a documentary film, less than an hour in length. It's been broadcast in the United States on a number of PBS stations already, called Hard to Believe, which is about the practice of the Chinese government of live harvesting organs from political prisoners. It's a source of revenue for the Chinese government, but it's hard to believe that this actually goes on in our modern world, hence the title of the film. Kay Rubicek, who's the producer of the film, will be our guest this Sunday, September 4th. You'll see and hear that interview both at vftb.net and youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. And then September 11th, director Ken Stone joins us to talk about the making of Hard to Believe. Again, both of those interviews available on vftb.net and the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Next Wednesday, September 7th, two more interviews from the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference. Our good friend Gary Stearman. Gary Stearman of Prophecy Watchers, always in education, and I take it as a true honor to be sitting in a chair a position here at Skywatch TV that he initiated, and he is a font of knowledge, a true scholar of Bible and Bible prophecy, and so he will be one of our guests. The other, a gentleman who is almost prophetic in the timing of the release of his new book. We just received our review copies of the book Future War from Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, who I was told last night by Tom Horn, said, you just watch. Within about 6 to 8 months, you're going to hear reports from our government warning of the threat posed by Terminator-like robotic weapons systems being developed by America's adversaries. Translate that how you will. Russia, China, perhaps. But Terminator-like robots being developed by our adversaries. And lo and behold, yesterday in the news, Defense Department spokesmen and officials concerned about the development of lethal autonomous weapons systems being developed by America's adversaries. And the same week, we get the copy of Colonel McGinnis's new book, Future Wars, Terminators, Cyborgs, Robotic Weapon Systems, What will enhanced human technology, what will war look like 20 years from now? This is going to be one for your reference shelf. Colonel McGinnis is a good writer. He's very intelligent. He still consults inside the Pentagon, so he is connected. He knows his stuff, and that will be next Wednesday's program, September 7th, on A View from the Bunker, VFTB.net, and YouTube.com/Derek P. Gilbert, or Derek Gilbert, rather. That's my own website is Derek P. Gilbert. Just never mind. Early, one cup of coffee. I need more. Our Bible study will resume this week. Because of our trip down to Morningside this past weekend, we're not able to get the Gilbert House Fellowship updated before Sunday got away from us. So we will resume this coming Sunday. You'll find the one-hour study, Old Testament, one-hour study on New Testament, posted by midday Sunday at gilberthouse.org. Beginning at Labor Day Monday, which is coming up this coming Monday, the God Conspiracy. One email, four lines, 4,000 dead, and that's just the beginning. My novel of government conspiracy and supernatural warfare in audio form released via YouTube. If you want to be updated every time, and we're going to release this on a weekly basis. First two episodes released Labor Day Monday, and then every Monday thereafter, another episode of about 20 minutes in length, so you can keep up to it without having to devote too much time. We'll spin out the novel over the next few months, and again, that will be at youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Click subscribe if you want to be notified every time we post a new episode. Skywatch TV next week, the first of 3 weeks with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. Yes, he's got a brand new book called The Book of Mysteries. Really fascinating approach to it. 365 single-page entries. It's a Bible study. It's an examination of the various mysteries in the Bible. And it's spun out as a story, like the Harbinger. So we got 3 weeks of interviews with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn on Skywatch TV. That begins this coming Sunday, September 4th. For dates and times where you can see the program, log on to skywatchtv.com and then click the top menu bar where it says Channels. We appreciate your reviews on iTunes. I've noticed there's a bunch more lately, and I thank you for that. That helps us in the search results when people are looking for content like this. Stitcher, YouTube, wherever else you find us, we sure appreciate you and your support. And, of course, to discuss the issues we cover here on A View from the Bunker, log on to facebook.com/viewfromthebunker. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 international license. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. www.incompetech.com is his website. And we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, in search of more coffee. And this is A View from the Bunker.